What you're about to listen to may include some potty talk. Then again, it may not. I hope it does, though. It's Thursday, October 4th, 2018. From Slate, it's The Gist. I'm Mike Pesca. And it looks like Brett Kavanaugh will get his vote, and soon. The investigation is in, the FBI investigation, FBI, four brief interludes. Actually, I'm not sure that's what FBI stands for. Depending on how you look at the results of this investigation, it could be fast, bordering, incomplete, or fair but inaccurate. Who knows? Kavanaugh's getting his vote. The whole ordeal shook the nation to, kind of close to its core. Women were recounting past traumas. Men were identifying with the angry dude who just wants to coach a girls' basketball team again. And maybe, you know, also rule on executive power once he's wearing the robe. The beer industry couldn't tell if all the free publicity was good or bad. Squee squirmed, Lindsey Graham burned. But the real hero of all of this was the hippocampus.
Indelible in the hippocampus is the laughter.
Yes, when Christine Blasey Ford mentioned the hippocampus during her testimony, Kavanaugh critics gveld.
I look at Dr. Ford, and I'm going to tell you something. I've worked with over the years, 20 years, a lot of victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. She was incredibly credible. The things that she could remember were, as she said, indelible to the hippocampus. And I think...
Now, I was talking to a neuroscientist a few days after testimony, and like me, he thought that Christine Blasey Ford was a powerful and credible witness and thought that Kavanaugh doesn't deserve confirmation for a few reasons. But this scientist did say, yeah, but that part about the hippocampus, what purpose did that serve? And I said, well, it demonstrated Dr. Ford's knowledge in the specific subject matter. I was kind of surprised that he wouldn't think or credit it or think that it was impressive. And he said, it had no functional meaning. It had no function. Well, what are you saying? I asked, and he said, well, first of all, I mean, did she have a reading of her hippocampus before the incident and a reading after so she could compare the effects? Like I said, the guy's a neuroscientist. And then he went on to say, all she's saying is a very rudimentary explanation of how memories are stored. I got his point. He's a neuroscientist. This wasn't news to him. He was kind of shocked that it would be impressive to anyone. It's like if I were an eyewitness and was being questioned, well, how do you know what you saw? And I just laid out the process of vision. And I said, well, I'm sure because cells in my retina converted light into electrical impulses, and then the optic nerve sent the impulses to the brain, and that produced an image. By the way, part of the brain that does that, not the hippocampus. Now, hippocampus is one of those terms that when you hear it, you think of something happy than what the actual hippocampus is. Like if I said to my son, Emmett, picture a hippocampus. And here's what he would see. Happy African megafauna, throwing frisbees on the quad, enrolling in Intro to Zoology, scarfing down copious amounts of small white marbles. He's nine. That's where the brain goes to. And by his brain, I'm talking about the neocortex and the thalamus. That music, by the way, is from Fantasia's Hippo Sequence. You know it as Hello Mudda, Hello Fada, but it's the dance of the hours. In fact, the hippocampus is where my memory of that is stored. And this is the most hippocampus-centric news story, I think, in history. We have two memories at odds, unless Kavanaugh's just outright lying. And seemingly, what we're really talking about is which of these individuals had a hippocampus that properly imprinted. One sighted her hippocampus. The other one possibly damaged his hippocampus through drink and perhaps didn't remember the role of the hippocampus if he was ever taught it in the first place. The national audience, well, anyone over 35 who watched the Anita Hill hearings, had those raised thanks to the hippocampus. And some viewers got very alarming prompts via their hippocampi, and they identified with the accuser because something like this had happened to them. I picture a collective national hippocampus, with these moments being indelibly written, or if your reasoning is motivated or your experience disrupted, not being written at all. And we won't know until the next time how well our national hippocampus did. On the show today, a spiel about Donald Trump's mocking of Christine Blasey Ford and one prominent defender thereof. But first, Tom Arnold's here. He has a conspiracy-minded TV show. The interview you're going to hear, it's something. Lots of energy. maybe not a lot of segues or breaths, I encourage you not to think of it so much as the talk of a person with information to impart, but just bask in this other human being who operates probably on a frequency different from your own, and then identify with him because he's grappling and wrestling with the exact ubiquitous questions of the day that we're all dealing with. Here is Tom Arnold inviting you, daring you to follow him as he hunts for the Trump tapes. The Defender is a beautiful car, but beauty is, of course, sometimes only skin deep. Not with the Defender. Let's talk about the interior. It's robust, built with integrity. Yes, it's designed iconically, the exterior. That's what compelled me. My neighbor Jay says, "Mike, you see what's on the block? It's a Defender." And I look down the block, and indeed there is. And me and Jay the neighbor and Michelle, we gather around the Defender. We peer in the window. I have to say, I don't want to make this a little too tawdry, but we lust, or perhaps we gvel. To drive the Defender is to explore with greater confidence. We looked at the cargo capacity, more room for the gear. There's really a wide range of adventures. The Defender family features the two-door Defender 90, the Defender 110, and the Defender 130, which seats up to 8. Push what's possible with a vehicle made to go further. The Defender 110. Learn more at LandRoverUSA.com/Defender. The Hunt for the Trump Tapes is a new Viceland series from Tom Arnold. Yeah, Tom Arnold. He's playing the role of investigative journalist. 4 episodes are out. They start with Howard Stern and go up, down, sideways from there. Hello, Tom. Thanks
they
for joining
up.
Me.
They go up. I hope. Well, Jane Mayer was in episode 3 with David Korn and Michael Isikoff, and it's going up. You know, in episode 4 was Mark Burnett, which seemed to be very effective with Mark Burnett. And it's going well.
Did that but one air before your confrontation?
No, but I think he was aware of it.
Yeah.
I got a call from my lawyer the Friday before, tried to read me some letter of threat, and I ignored it.
Yeah.
And so it's effective.
So let's just explain. So Mark Burnett was the executive producer of The Apprentice.
Yeah, he was really the genius behind it. He created the mystique that is Donald Trump 15 years. Mark Burnett is the genius behind Survivor, Shark Tank, The Voice. Anyway, he becomes friends with Donald Trump, and he creates this image of this guy, which was sold to people. I'm from Tumbull, Iowa. You know, I worked at a meatpacking plant for 3 years, and his base are people at the Iowa State Fair. So they believe what they saw on television, the edited Donald Trump.
Right.
And so that's what Mark Burnett sold for 15 years, and he became good friends with Donald Trump, and he still talks to him 3 times a week, and he sits with him at the prayer breakfast. And so,
and he was involved in the inauguration.
Yeah, that's funny. I did a tweet about that the Friday before. That was also in the legal letter, and Deborah Messing from Will & Grace, the big star, her agent got a threatening letter also about a tweet about the inauguration, threatening from Mark Burnett. And I was like, this guy goes around and does all these legal threats when somebody says something about Donald Trump. He's still doing his business. He doesn't criticize Donald Trump ever.
Well, what he does publicly, he put out a statement saying that he and his wife, who's Roma Downey, touched by an angel, that they don't support the policies of, and then they'll list the policies they don't support. But like we've documented, he did, through a second company, take a lot of money to run the inauguration.
That's the story that Deborah Messing and I, that's what he threatened to, that's what he's suing
us for. It's there in the New York Times.
Oh, yeah. That's what we retweeted that and literally got cease and desist letters because we retweeted the story that you just described. That's what he is hell-bent on. And I've literally, to his face, said, you need to come out public on one thing, maybe separating this immigration policy. He won't literally, he does his cover. And then I'll say, I need to come down there and get this footage because I talked about during the election, the N-word, buddies of mine work on the show, executive producer.
But were you on the show? Were you on Celebrity Apprentice?
No, it is so bad that I passed on it. Like Donald Trump would call my house. Donald Trump called my house with Mark Burnett and asked me to do it again and again, and I refuse because that's how bad – I refuse when Arnold Schwarzenegger asked me to do it. That, and he's one of my best friends in the world. So that's how bad – it's the only show I've ever refused. I've done everything terrible. So
– that seems accurate.
Yes, but my buddies – and you know, there's some of my buddies that worked on my Best at Sports show, period. Yeah. And so there's a lot of crossover there. My buddies were with him in Russia, in Moscow, at the Hilton during the Miss Universe when the hookers were in the room with the pee-pee tape. There's a lot of crossover. The fact there's so much crossover with me should indicate he should not be the president. No, I'm not even kidding. Like, it's crazy. So
you're like contaminated. The more.
And so this happens, and he's going for office, and I'm like, there's no way he'll be. And then suddenly the Access Hollywood tape comes out, and I'm like, well, that'll do it.
Right.
Because this guy is so dangerous. My friends that are successful in the business said, don't worry. He'll never – don't worry. I go, why aren't you guys speaking up? You know, Ari Emanuel, for instance, the most powerful agent, my former agent,
right,
until I talked about him.
Rahm Emanuel's brother.
Right, so, of course. And, you know, don't worry. He'll never be president. Ari Emanuel's been in the White House since then. And don't worry. And he owns Miss Universe contest. So he has what Trump talked about on Howard Stern. Well, I've been backstage Miss Universe and see everybody naked. I take my friends back there. And the Miss Teen America pageant, right, by the way. He's like, don't worry. He'll never be president. And then suddenly – Access Hollywood doesn't do anything. And so,
so let me just stop you for a second and lay a couple things down. One, before the Access Hollywood tape come out, you say you have all these friends who know about him saying these terrible words on The Apprentice. Did you have any inkling that the Access Hollywood tape existed before it came
out? No.
Okay.
No, but I just knew his history, and I knew what he did on The Apprentice. I knew he sexually harassed people. I knew the producers had to pull him out four times and go, oh, dude. Listen, you can't – because the producers are my friends.
Like, yes.
The person that spoke to him before every take for 10 years is a guy I know.
You have seen these tapes, or you have heard from people who had seen these tapes?
I've seen these tapes.
Okay, but I want to know, have you seen him use the N-word on a tape?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And you are sure that tapes exist of him
using
the N-word
because
you have seen that?
And I'm 100% sure of that. Here's how I'll give you an example. He's sitting here, he's talking, and he uses it. He uses it in several different ways. This just in a day, and he's sitting there in between takes, and he's like, you're fuckable to the camera operator woman. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're fucking. This guy's talking. They're like, whoa, don't. And he's like, and then he takes phone calls. This is why they're shooting. All kinds of stuff going on. Someone brings him a fax. This is some of the older stuff. He's talking about, you know, I did this, business deal. I did this. Just there's a lot of insanity. They can't erase the tape because it's a game show.
This is right. So I was on Jeopardy, and then a lawyer comes in because of the game show scandals in America. They have laws that regulate these things. So you're saying because it's although the genre is reality, it's technically a game show, and so they have to keep these tapes.
Mm-hmm.
And you're also saying the reason that Mark Burnett, well, lay this out. I don't want to put words in your mouth. What is his real motivation? Why does he not find some backdoor way to get the tapes out? Why is he so active in keeping the tapes suppressed?
Because he is Donald Trump's best friend, and he is a phony, and he is a fraud, and he's done everything he can. Like, in Burnett, in training in the UK, when you're training for the military there, they talk a lot about the KGB. I'm not a conspiracy guy, but he knows about Russia. Trump doesn't know about Russia or the U.S. or our history or World War II. Trump's never read the Bible. He's never read the Constitution. He has no idea what's going on. He doesn't know. He's never been of service. Trump's never visited a war zone in his life. But he wants to bring the war to him and have a fucking parade. That's who Donald Trump is. He's not a sports fan. He doesn't root for a team. For real. I've known him. He'd come on my sports show, no idea what's going on.
He watches golf. That I believe.
Yeah.
But he doesn't have much of a knowledge base of these an NFL team, which he wants to own.
No. And then, by the way, the tape I have, there's a lot of golf stuff where he just fucking trashes everybody. And it's,
well, once he loses the golf base, I mean, what does he have left? So I want to ask you.
By the way, he's broke. He owns nothing. He's a licensing person.
Yeah.
If he cashed out today, he would be broke.
Yeah, you got to ask
yourself.
They're
also grifting. He and his family and his friends are criminals. They are grifting. You know, you'll see in the Michael Cohen episode what really happened. It looked on TV like I'm a crazy person. I just took a picture with him, but I made it up. But once Michael Cohen pled guilty, I could legally use text messages between us, and there's a little more to it. I mean, I'm not an investigative journalist. Jane Mayer, who's on the show today, David Corn, these guys are, and I respect them so much. I respect what you do and stuff, and I'm a goofball. But these Trump people, the people around him, there's a lot of competent people, not the people that is that he has in the cabinet, because they're all fucking idiots and they got to go. But I don't know what, you know, they're putting up with a lot.
If the Access Hollywood tape didn't change enough minds, why are you confident that a tape of him saying to a camera woman, you're fuckable?
No, it's the whole day.
But do you think that it will change minds? If the actual tape that we all saw.
Hear me.
Yeah.
If you saw a full day of incompetence and criminal behavior.
Tom,
and,
I've seen almost two years of it.
No. But a full day, if you saw 10 Edwards, take a full day, just continuous, and you saw him have the president being yanked out of there and say, listen, you can't sexually harass that woman.
That's on the tape?
Yes.
Him getting dressed down.
Him getting dressed up by the producers, producers meeting. You can't do that. And him making Don Jr. cry. That's different. I'm telling you, it's different than anything you've seen. It's continuous. And the producer's coming in a meeting like, God, we're in trouble. We got to. Nobody's ever talked about him like that. And Mark Burnett saying he is literally the worst human being I've ever met in his life. How would you like to hear that? And once Donald Trump knows that's going to happen, that everybody is turning, he's going to be like, okay, here's the deal. I've been the best president ever in 2 years, and I've given you everything. I'm going out of my terms. Mm-hmm. This is going to be the closing show, the big finale. This is what I'm doing. That's what's going to happen.
Okay, I got a few more questions. Do you think we, as a society—
and you know what? Let's give it a try.
Do you think we, as a society, are doing ourselves a disservice if we put so much hope on a tape like this, as opposed to being active and getting out in the streets and just registering to vote?
Of course you register to vote. Of course you vote. Of course you're active. You do your thing, and by the way, they got to do it all. You know, I'm so grateful that I'm doing what I got to do because I'm a 59 year old dad. I got a 2.5 year old daughter, 5.5 year old son, and I happen to know some of these people. And one at a time, whether it be Roger Stone, David Pecker, Dylan Howard, Michael Cohen, and Mark Burnett, I've gotten in these guys' faces, not just like. Called them out. These guys have threatened to sue me. They have some of them sued me legally. They threatened to bankrupt me. I don't have money. You don't get much money from Viceland. This isn't just a show for me. This show will be over, and then I don't have a job after that. These guys have threatened to ruin my credibility, which I have zero. This isn't about the show. But, you know, you ask Viceland how happy they are to be fucking working with me. They're not. You know, they've been wonderful to me. They've really given
the
opportunity.
Are people watching?
We got to get people to watch the fucking show, man. People are – do you know how many death threats I've gotten? For real.
Yeah.
Me and my fucking family.
Here's what I want to ask you. If tapes
but
come
– that's what I'm saying is that's what I do that gets to these guys so much they lose their fucking shit. And there is tapes. But you're saying, how can it be? What is more important? No. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And then there's more to come. I'm doing what I'm doing, which is I'm in their faces, and things are happening. Everybody needs to keep doing what they're doing. It's not either or.
Yeah.
You know.
I've watched the show. You have. Oh, yeah. You obviously are a comedian. You have a comic persona, and the show's funny. The Easter Bunny's in it and things like that.
Yeah, but the Easter Bunny. It's not the fucking Easter Bunny.
It's just a bunny.
The guy dressed in a suit. Yeah, Easter suit.
Yes.
I know, but I actually call him his name, too.
So, if a tape exists and someone has a decision who to leak this to, are you an imperfect vessel?
Here's the thing. I would never hold it back. I would get it to a legitimate journalist like Rodin or Jane Mayer or Cord, because they will protect your identity, and you don't have to wear a fucking – you wear a bunny suit if you want to get it to me. And I'll give it to a real guy who can protect your identity, and we'll get it to the public, and it won't be about my show. And I, of course, I'll do the best thing for America. And the next thing's going to happen is I'm going to take some journalists down to MGM. We're going to sit in the screening room and watch this whole fucking day of this.
Yeah. So basically, if you have a tape and you want to leak it, and you're a furry, leak it to Tom.
Yes.
But If not.
Well, there you go. There, you were trying to get your joke. Tell me next time you're doing a fucking joke, okay? I'll let you get your goddamn joke, asshole.
Say,
I got a joke. I want to do this thing.
You
fucker. Just
trying to create a little room
you
for
fucker.
The joke.
I'm sorry.
Tom Arnold's Hunt for the Trump Tapes is on Viceland. I don't know if you
you're
saw.
The best.
Tom
you're
was here.
Best.
Thank you, Tom.
I
good
love
to meet
your
you.
Podcast, by the way.
Thanks, man. This episode is brought to you by The Jordan Harbinger Show. You've heard me talk about The Jordan Harbinger Show because it's one of my favorites. He does in-depth interviews with some of the world's most fascinating minds. I can name a few: Barbara Boxer, Anderson Cooper, Michael McFaul, the Ukraine or Russia ambassador talking about Ukraine. One I recently listened to was Stanley McChrystal, the general, the former general, and he told an interesting story about revering Robert E. Lee. But then, after having a portrait of him for 40 years, he's a 63-year-old man, throwing it in the trash. Because his wife says, you know, what that picture and that man means to you, it doesn't mean to other people, and you have to understand that. And then in the interview, they got around to the point where McChrystal talked about that interview in Rolling Stone magazine that pretty much ended his career, where it got to the desk of Barack Obama, and it had McChrystal saying unflattering things about the war effort, and just how he talked to his wife and how they decided not to be bitter and not to wallow in it. He could have taken some shots at the process, the reporter, or the president at that point, but he didn't. It was just an overall good interview. It was facilitated by Jordan's excellent interview style. Whether Jordan is conducting an interview or giving advice to a listener, you will find something useful that can apply to your own life in every single episode of The Jordan Harbinger Show. That could mean learning how to ask for advice the right way or discovering a little mindset tweak that changes how you see the world. Search for The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R, like the first three letters, and hard, B-I-N-G-E, as in how you'll want to catch up on all the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And now the spiel. 2 days ago in Mississippi, Donald Trump, oh God, let me just say, that's a phrase, Mississippi, Donald Trump, two proper nouns converging, each one making the other worse. You know, like at her Greek resort, Lindsay Lohan, or Kanye West after the credits rolled on Saturday Night Live. Anyway, in Mississippi, Donald Trump mocked Christine Blasey Ford, or as some of his staunchest defenders asserted, he mocked her assertions. Now, remember what he said about Ford before this speech to the crowd, that she was a very credible witness. He called her compelling. He even said this.
And she looks like a very fine woman to me. Very fine woman.
Now, let's contrast that with Mississippi Trump.
How did you get home? I don't remember. How'd you get there? I don't remember. Where is the place? I don't remember. How many years ago was it? I don't know. I don't know. I don't know.
Now, I have to tell you, I don't actually think it's Mississippi that got Trump all riled up. You know what I think it is? I think it's standing. I noticed that when Trump is sitting, he's a lot less combative. He's more demure. He also gestures a lot less, and I think all his gesturing excites the humors in his blood. We talk of teleprompter Trump or impromptu Trump, but sitting and standing Trump, big difference between those two guys. And with these comments, sitting Trump was even more withdrawn than usual, because if you remember, who he was sitting with as he was making his initial comments were different heads of state, and he wanted to look like, you know, a mature individual next to them. He was sitting next to the president of Colombia, and that was when he called her a fine woman. And then there was this, which is a little stronger than fine woman, but still, he wasn't taking aim at Dr. Ford, just the Democrats.
The Democrats are playing this game that is disgraceful. It's a disgrace to the country, and I think you're going to see it in the midterms. I think people are wise to it. It's just a con game. He's a high-quality person. They're bringing people out of the woods. They can do that to anybody.
Yeah, so that was Prime Minister Abe of Japan. Didn't want to look too cuckoo in front of that guy, but before a crowd, and while he was standing, you got this.
I don't know. What neighborhood was it in? I don't know. Where's the house? I don't know. Upstairs, downstairs, where was it? I don't know. But I had one beer. That's the only thing I remember.
Now, I thought the weirdest reaction to Trump's insults was this, tweeted out by former George W. Bush spokesman Ari Fleischer. He said he didn't mock Professor Ford. He pointed out many of the inconsistencies in her account, something the mainstream media won't do. because they're too invested in attacking Brett Kavanaugh. If the press were balanced, they'd have raised the same issues President Trump raised here. Really? You think if the press were better, they'd take the tack that Donald Trump is taking? Huh. Well, Ari Fleischer, I give you your wish. This, this is WARI Eyewitness News. Here's your anchor, Slab Underhill. Today's top story. Missing Cub Scout Troop 482 has been found hiking in the Cloud Mountains, and all are said to be safe at home with loved ones. The group had left for what was to be a four-hour hike. 4 hours? Yes, 4 hours. Sure, right. Well, who was the scoutmaster? We don't know. Did they get cell service? We don't know. Were merit badges earned? Who's to say? Sounds like a CON job. Now here's Ken Spormore with weather.
Thanks, Slab. They say it's gonna rain. Gonna rain? Have you heard this? Everyone's saying it. Well, is it? Should I say it? I shouldn't say it. I'll get in trouble if I say it. Okay, I'll say it. Believe me, it will. It will. Believe me. Now here's Tug Munson with sports.
Oh, the Vikings. Have you seen them? Am I right? The Vikings? The Vikings. With the stupid Viking horn on the helmet. Remember those stupid horns on the side? They lost to the Rams. Nobody mentions this. Why does nobody mention this? In four games, Kirk Cousins has made the Vikings into the most accomplished team, more than any other in the history of the NFC North. Just you see. The Vikings won in Wisconsin. Not since Eisenhower have the Vikings won in Wisconsin. They said it couldn't be done. The Vikings did it. Cousins is the greatest quarterback. A lot of people are saying we didn't think he'd be this good, the greatest, except for possibly Abraham Lincoln. Back to you, Slab. This has been WARI. If you're wary, thank Ari. And that's it for today's show. Pierre Bien-Aimé and Daniel Schrader produced The Gist. They're not so bummed out about Hippocampus. It's just that storing pictures in the cloud, it's not what they imagined it would be. TJ Raphael, senior producer of Slate Podcast, she thought that Kanye had a lot of valuable pieces of media criticism to impart after the credits rolled. Steve Lickteig, executive producer of Slate Podcast, who, if you told him as a kid he'd be engaged in flash driving, he'd think of James Bond. But then, cut to the present, you find out it's backing up files, he'd think of Miss Moneypenny. The Gist. I take you to the year 1979. A young Mike Pesca gets one word from the future whispered in his ear. This will be a huge part of your life, Mike. Here's the word. Laser jet. Laser jet. This could be so cool. Or it could be a post-Armageddon scenario. An anti-alien insurgency. Exciting, but terrifying. Smash cut. 2007. Mike standing over a printer, trying to unjam it. God damn it, I'd have taken the aliens instead of this. Doom-peru, de-peru, do-peru, and thanks for listening.